The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wait a minute. Do you still think politics is boring? Well, not when you can say fun words like caucus. Yes, it's fun words like caucus and more. With the intellectual, intersexual, and intersectional. Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Mangy Fetlocks here. I'd like to summarize Trump's situation currently in as few words as possible. I know you're busy. Scared puppy, orange guppy, so grumpy, that Trumpy. Sick puppy, shows up he, needs jailing, he's failing. Old fatty, he's batty, big liar, spare tire, scared baby, just maybe, he'll crumble, get humble, I'm betting, he's sweating.
Oh yeah.
Sad viper, full diaper, full panic, he's manic, he's falling, jail's calling.
Aha. Mangy Fetlocks, everybody. That's Bruce W. Nelson getting us started on this Tuesday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler. Welcome to the show. You know, Marcy Wheeler was just here last Monday. And we knew that this third indictment was coming down like any minute. And of course, there was plenty to talk about Monday, even though we still didn't have it. Well, we got it Tuesday. Now, it's been a hell of a week. I read the entire thing for you, so you don't have to. It's recorded. It's up on its own podcast. It's on a YouTube video. If you want to read the indictment but don't have the time to sit down and read all 45 pages and go through it, I did it for you. So you can hear it and grok it. And then yesterday, of course, I played some highlights of it. And I thought, you know, we should get Marcy back because so much has transpired, not just on this third indictment, but, you know, if you looked at the show card I have up for today's show, there's a whole lot of legal problems that the former guy has. So he's been indicted on three. A fourth one is coming out of Georgia. We've got trial dates. Oh, hold on. I have no audio. Oh, my God. All right. Hold on one second. I don't know what happened to the audio there, but okay, we're back. So anyway, there's a lot. So of course I called on Marcy Wheeler. Marcy Wheeler of emptywheel.net. She's got it down. I don't know how she keeps it straight, but she does. So with no further ado, now because Marcy is in Ireland these days, that's where she's living right now, we tend to tape her appearances on the show. So we're doing it early in the morning. No, I know audio's coming back. So we taped this at 10 o'clock this morning. And so it's now 5 Eastern. So anyway, here we go. Marcy Wheeler, with no further ado. And let's hope this works. I always worry because we have gremlins in the studio, but here we go. Ready? Take it away. The gods. Here we go. Come on, Marcy. I think. Okay. Go. Spoke last Monday. The indictment, as we guessed it would be, was released on Tuesday. Disappointed that Jack Smith was very deliberate in what charges he brought and left out insurrection. Did you think that should have been charged or no?
Oh, I never believed insurrection should have been charged. That was a fantasy perpetuated by people who didn't have to like think about how to bring this to trial. So no, insurrection was never going to be part of this. Do I think that you in 3 years' time could show that Trump engaged in a conspiracy with people beyond the 6 people listed in the indictment? Absolutely. But if this thing is going to get to trial, if this thing has any chance of getting to trial before the election, you need to do something that isolates Donald.
Yes.
And that will meet the terms of the law for which you have the evidence without trying to spin in everybody. I did a post probably a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Nicole, where I said, you know, why do you charge Donald alone and how you can charge Donald alone? Mm-hmm. And that may be how or why Jack Smith structured this indictment in the way he did. I suspect there may be other reasons as well. One of the things this indictment did was only tell the public stuff we already knew, with about 10 exceptions. Like, everything else we already knew. And that's okay, because one of the things that the indictment, like, you don't see Cassidy Hutchinson in there. No. There is not a reference to Cassidy Hutchinson in there. And I'm okay with that, because while I expect Cassidy Hutchinson to testify in any eventual trial of Donald Trump, or maybe she won't need to, maybe Mark Meadows will do all the testimony. I'd rather have Mark Meadows named in there than Cassidy Hutchinson, because it lowers the chances that Cassidy Hutchinson is going to be terrorized for the next year until Donald Trump goes on trial. And I, you know, like, I suspect there's a lot of decisions like that that went into the structure of this indictment. And we will only understand the structure of this indictment 9 months from now, when other people have been charged and, you know, he's built it out. But I do. I sort of suspect this is the nugget. Bring this nugget to trial, hopefully before the election. And then, like, just as an example, Sidney Powell is co-conspirator number three.
Right.
You could build an entire sub-conspiracy on Sidney Powell and involve people like Mike Flynn and Patrick Byrne. Maybe. Don't know. And then what you'd have is you'd have Trump going to trial based on things he said and Sidney Powell said, right? Mm-hmm. She would be a co-conspirator of his. And then Sidney Powell going on trial, hypothetically, of course, based on stuff she did and said with Mike Flynn and Patrick Byrne and some others. And so, in other words, like, I predicted in August 2021 that you would use obstruction as a way to kind of build modular conspiracies, to build this modularly. And there's nothing in this indictment that does that, that suggests differently. That, you know, the indictment certainly allows for that, and maybe that's what we'll see going forward.
Well, so you mentioned Sidney Powell, who has been identified not in. Obvious, she is co-conspirator three. We've been. It's interesting that.
Identified one through five.
Okay.
I think there's still some uncertainty about six.
Okay.
But I also think identifying who six is at this point doesn't really matter, because the function of six is a function that both Mike Roman and Boris Epstein did.
Okay.
And so, and frankly, well, I mean, we can come back to that, but one through five are definitely, we know exactly who they are. And six, I think there's still some uncertainty about it, and it's not a very interesting uncertainty.
Okay. Helped implement a plan to submit fraudulent slates of presidential electors. This could have been a number of people. Five is. Do you agree? It's Ken Cheeseborough, who I'm not overly familiar with.
Yeah, it's that. Yeah, it's definitely Ken Cheeseborough.
Okay.
Ken Cheeseborough was one of the people that the January 6th committee referred for prosecution. There. Yeah.
Okay. And
because,
the first,
because he obviously, I mean, he wrote it down. Like, he, in December, he's like, oh, we're going to go ask these fake electors to commit a crime for us. That sounds kind of criminal. Yeah.
Were obvious ones. And they have not been indicted because Jack Smith wants to get this case to trial. Quickly, they will be indicted down the line.
Yeah. And as we speak, Nicole, yesterday, Bernie Kerik met with Jack Smith. Bernie Kerik was the researcher for Rudy Giuliani's effort. In the last couple weeks, Bernie Kerik handed over more of the materials that he developed with Rudy Giuliani. So it's not impossible, right, that. Oh, and the grand jury is meeting as we speak.
So oh,
we
are today.
Taping, we are taping in the 10 o'clock hour, and this will go live at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. And so who knows what's going to happen between the time we tape and the time this goes live, because that's the way life is happening. Anyway, the grand jury is back at work. Boris Epstein met with Jack Smith's prosecutors yesterday. I mean, there is certainly the possibility or the probability that Rudy and the others will be charged. And we just don't know. I mean, for the reasons I just laid out, we don't know whether Smith would charge each of them individually and then charge their co-conspirators along with them, or whether we don't know how it goes from here.
No,
it doesn't really matter.
You know, right.
Like, it doesn't really matter. We're moving forward on Donald Trump.
We are. Now, with this case, obviously Jack Smith wants it to go quickly. So does the judge. Now, the judge is Tanya Chutkan, who is, it seems like, no nonsense. She's not taking shit from anyone. And so there was some action yesterday in that Jack Smith had filed a protective order, basically saying, trying to prevent Trump and his people from releasing the items that they get in discovery from going public with it. They wanted a response in 5 days. Trump's lawyer said, I don't have time. I've got to do all the Sunday shows. The judge said, too bad. You get that in. They got it in at right at the deadline yesterday, right before 5 o'clock. And then Jack Smith's office turned around a response to that within 3 hours, saying, look, as you can tell, they're trying to try this case in the press instead of doing it in court. Do I have that right? That's the where it stands now.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, basically, to facilitate a quick trial, DOJ wants to be able to hand over all the discovery and to prevent that from happening. And also to, again, I mean, they're right on this, to make it easier to try this in the public sphere. Because, you know, in the public sphere, you're going to have Maggie Haberman and Josh Dossie say ridiculous things because that's what they do. That's their job, is to say ridiculous things that Trump insiders tell them. Whereas that's a very different issue from trying this case in the same courthouse where 300 other people have been tried for the same charge, the obstruction charge, which makes up two of the four charges against Donald Trump.
Okay. Now, they're still on track for, I believe, Judge Chutkan scheduled a preliminary hearing on a trial date for May 20th. Is that going to hold?
No, sorry, that is Aileen Cannon.
Oh, that's Aileen Cannon. Okay, duh. I'm getting them mixed up. Right. There's a calendar. I mean, I should make up a spreadsheet, because it's very hard to keep them all separate. Right now, Trump is currently under three separate indictments. There's this newest one, number three, in D.C. That's on January 6th. The first indictment is 34 felony counts in New York, based around the hush money paid to Stormy Daniels. And the second one is the one in Florida with Aileen Cannon. You're right, that one's scheduled for May. And
Alvin Bragg is scheduled for March, but he has sort of intimated that if he was asked nicely, he could defer his trial and clear up that March space for Jack Smith. So it's possible that we could see this January 6th thing go to trial in March.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay. And then there's a fourth one on the horizon. Apparently, they have shut down the streets in front of the Fulton County Courthouse, where an indictment is expected from Fulton County DA Fani Willis anytime between now and the next 10 days from now.
Smart people think that's going to be next week. And the reason why is there are two, I follow Anna Bowers for this, but there's some really great, one thing I'm really happy about is that the journalists in Atlanta covering this are doing a better job on net than the journalists in D.C. covering various legal. I mean, there are some terrific journalists in D.C. There's just so many political journalists kind of spewing whatever John Lauro or Donald Trump or Jim Trusty or whatever tells them to say. And so Atlanta has a lot of really good journalists, and they're reading the timing of the grand jury and the timing of the subpoenas that go out. And they suspect that the grand jury that will be visiting this is the one that sits on, I think, Wednesday and Thursday, or Thursday and Friday, regardless. Uh-huh. And they'll start getting evidence. They either will get all the evidence next week, or they'll get some of it this week and some next week. But it, you know, so there you would expect a Thursday of next week indictment.
Wow. Look, I'm having a hard time keeping it straight. I know you, this is what you do. So I'm in awe. But how is Donald Trump keeping this straight? I mean, can you imagine what's going on in his head right now? But his defiance is just ratcheted up. I mean, everybody who's against him is evil, or, you know, the stuff that he's spewing about the judges and the prosecutor. I mean, everybody, this is, we all know this is like uncharted territory, but this is insane. Any normal person would first of all bow out of the presidential race because knowing what they're up against, but he doubles down. How do you report on something that's so just ridiculous?
It's exhausting, and it's really frustrating to see people. One hack I have adopted and that I will continue to press is something I mentioned earlier, which is that two of the charges against Trump, the two obstruction charges, 18 U.S.C. 1512 C2, 18 U.S.C. 1512 K, those are the same obstruction charged against 300 of Donald Trump's dupes, 300 members of his mob already. And the range of people that includes is everybody from, you know, somebody who saw Trump's tweet on the internet and bought guns from Amazon and came, you know, the guy, remember the guy who rappelled down from the balcony to the floor of the Senate and then went and sat in Mike Pence's seat?
Yeah.
He and his buddies, the two buddies he went to D.C. with, they were charged with this. The both sides, the militias, were charged with this. A bunch of individuals were charged with this. And so one after another, you're seeing, you know, senators Marsha Blackburn, Tim Scott, Lindsey Graham, you're seeing senators say, oh my gosh, how dare DOJ charge this case? It's like, well, let me name your constituents. Like Marsha Blackburn, her constituents, remember the other guy, zip tie guy, famous guy, right?
Right.
The guy I was all kitted out. He's from Tennessee. So he's a Marsha Blackburn constituent, and he and his mom have both been found guilty of conspiring to obstruct the vote count. Same charge is used with Donald Trump. And so this notion that it's so unusual is only, you can only get there when you suggest that these 300 people who were duped by Donald Trump, who believed the big lie, many of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they should do time, and Donald Trump, for telling the big lie, should not do time. And that's a real toxic notion, that Donald Trump is somehow immune from the crime that, you know, he Tom Sawyered thousands of his followers to commit.
It's so right. Look, I have this theory. I call it opposite world, where everything, if you flip it in a mirror image, you get some semblance of reality. The fact that, you know, they're screaming, first of all, this is a First Amendment case. When Jack Smith stripped out anything, it has nothing to do with anything Trump said. It is not about his speech. It's about his actions. I think it was brilliant.
Can I interrupt and explain that too?
Yes.
Because two things. One is the two charges that most people talk about are, one is the conspiracy to defraud the United States. So basically trying to deceive the U.S. government into certifying him as the winner of the electoral count rather than Joe Biden. That's the idea, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is most obviously fraud is, one way they did that is to recruit fake electors in all the swing states and have those fake electors submit basically forgeries to the archives. So, you know, let's go and get 16 Michiganders and 16 Georgians and 16 Nevadans and 16 Arizonans and 16 Pennsylvanians and 16 Wisconsins and 16 New Mexicans and get them all to engage in forgery together. And with that forgery, to have a document to use to be able to claim the necessity to delay the vote certification, to claim some basis for, and that's, so that's forgery. Like, mm-hmm. that's an action that's forgery. And we mentioned Ken Cheeseborough earlier. Ken Cheeseborough at the beginning of this process wrote it all down. He's like, you know, in this state, it'll be totally illegal. In this state, it'll be way problematic. And this, and so it, in fact, you know, in Georgia and Michigan, it's very problematic. I think there are going to be some interesting developments in Nevada, which was charged slightly differently in the indictment than some others. In Wisconsin, it wasn't as problematic. In Pennsylvania, they kind of CYA'd, and their CYA is in the indictment. So in other words, Pennsylvania wrote language saying, we don't really mean this. And in the indictment, there's the language among Rudy Giuliani's people saying, oh my gosh, we can't let it get out that Pennsylvania said, we don't really mean this, because if that happens, then the fake elector certificates. So that's one thing. That's clear fraud. Another kind of fraud is the effort to get Mike Pence to claim that he could single-handedly go out and throw out votes.
Right.
And he has gone out. I mean, it's been really interesting since the indictment rolled out, because he's been much more outspoken about what he was asked to do. And he was like, you know, that it wasn't just them asking me to, you know, go back to the states. They asked me to throw out votes. So that those are the two key prongs of action. But the other thing, on the conspiracy to obstruct and the obstruct charge, and this is the one 300 people have charged with, and all of these judges, including Judge Chicken, have written language about why, if I focus on this guy named Alan Hostetter, who, by the way, is not from Florida, so deviation from the norm among us. But he totally bought the big lie, and he, like Donald Trump, recruited a bunch of people to get to D.C. to prevent the vote certification. Like Donald Trump, engaged in a lot of big lie himself. Like Donald Trump, was out there pressing the big lie, gave speeches. You know, he's very similarly situated to Donald Trump. Also, did not enter the Capitol like Donald Trump. And in his in writing up his guilty verdict, Reagan appointee, Royce Limbirth, said, I get that you believe the big lie. I get that you actually believe Donald Trump was unfairly deprived of winning the vote count, but there are legal ways to contest that. And you, as a former cop, know that the way to contest that is not to get a bunch of armed people to storm the Capitol. Right. And that's the kind of, when I emphasize 300 people have already been prosecuted for this, this is what I'm talking about, is that there are the D.C. Circuit, and I'm sure Supreme Court, will soon be determining what the specific terms of this crime are. I suspect it will apply to Donald Trump more easily than it applies to a lot of the others. But there are dozens of court opinions that tell you what you're hearing from Maggie and Mike and Devlin and Dossie, what you're hearing from the New York Times and Washington Post about this being a First Amendment issue. No, if you read the court filings, if you read the existing opinions on how this charge applies to January 6th, that's nonsense.
Right.
And what you need to do is you need to show Donald Trump did things to obstruct the vote count. What did he do? Well, he first tried to get Mike Pence to call it off. And after that failed, he encouraged a mob to go try and assassinate Mike Pence, which made it sort of impossible to carry out the vote. I mean, that, it's very simple, and that's not about speech. It's about actions. And then finally, the other point that's important is the reason the reason Jack Smith charged this as conspiracy. Donald Trump is charged by himself right now, six co-conspirators, is that the way in which conspiracy law works in the United States, conspirators, whether they're charged on the same indictment or another one, their speech, their words can come in without them taking the stand. So, for example, when Rudy Giuliani said to Rusty Bowers, the Speaker of the Arizona House, if I'm getting that right, when he said to Rusty Bowers, oh, we have no evidence, we just have suspicions, we have no evidence, that can come in as proof that there was no evidence. When John Eastman admitted to Greg Jacob that he fully expected the Supreme Court to rule against him on this, that comes in as a conspirator statement. So it's not just whether Trump believed he knew that he was lying. It's also that John Eastman admitted he knew he was lying, and so did Rudy Giuliani. And so after the election, did Sidney Powell. She said, no reasonable person should have taken what I said about the Dominion voting machines fairly. Well, guess what? That is going to come in. I mean, that's a little bit harder to get in than what Rudy said in real time. But this is how the case is built. It's built on co-conspirators. When Kenneth Cheeseborough, we already mentioned, when he admitted before the entire fake elector plot happened that they were breaking the law, that will come in as a co-conspirator statement.
Okay.
They don't have to get Kenneth Cheeseborough to say that on the stand because he is charged credibly as co-conspirator. So, the prosecution, so long as they can convince Tanya Chutkan that he is a co-conspirator here, that statement where Kenneth Cheesebro at the beginning of the fake electors plot said, oh, wow, totally illegal in Michigan and Georgia and Las Vegas. That's all going to come in without them taking the stand. And that's why it's built the way it is. And that's why all these claims about what Trump believed are irrelevant once you believe that he entered into conspiracy with Rudy and John Eastman and Kenneth Cheesebro and Sidney Powell and Jeffrey Clark.
Right.
And Jeffrey Clark, too. I mean, Jeffrey Clark also made admissions that make it clear that he didn't believe what he was saying.
Which makes his role even more despicable, because when you learn that he was ready to become the acting attorney general, he accepted Trump's offer and only was not named to that role because everybody else, all the lawyers, the people said that they would all resign en masse. And so that's the only thing that stopped Trump from pulling that last trigger that right in the waning in the last days before January 6th.
Right. And the other thing about Jeffrey Clark's conduct is that he was doing it covertly. So he was meeting with Trump in violation. I love this because, this is the one time that White House contact rules are going to come back to bite Donald Trump. So he was going and meeting with Trump without telling his bosses. His bosses found out about it and said, don't do that anymore. And
repeatedly warned him, and he kept going back and meeting with the president without their knowledge or approval.
Right. And that's, again, the kind of conduct that makes it easy to prove a conspiracy. It makes it easy to prove that they did enter into a conspiracy and makes the corrupt nature of it fairly obvious. So that's what I'm talking about. When I say that all this garbage from Maggie and Mike and Devlin and Dossie, this about it being First Amendment, no, this is what it actually looks like in a courtroom. This is what it has looked like in the courtroom for 2.5 years.
Right.
So
and
we know where it's going.
This is also why we encourage everyone to read the damn thing rather than listen to what, the different filters are telling you is in it. It's right here. You can read it. And that's why I recorded it, so that you can hear the actual words in the indictment. Well, every time I hear any of them talk about the First Amendment, it's like they did not charge him with inciting the riot. They did charge him with what was the word? Not escalating it, but basically amplifying
exploiting
it,
or
exploiting
using it. Yeah,
it, exploiting it.
Yeah, and I expect that everything in the indictment is a dramatic understatement of the kind of evidence they have. But it's just conservative. I mean, mm-hmm. You don't want to promise the moon in the indictment, because bringing this to the big concern about bringing this to trial, one of the most interesting pieces of reporting I've seen so far, and I don't remember where this was from. It might have been CNN or Daily Beast, but people who are key members of Donald Trump's campaign are also key witnesses in this case. The most important to my mind is Jason Miller. Like, Jason Miller is one of the top people on Trump's reelection campaign.
Right.
And if you look, senior campaign advisor, I think is how he's referred
okay.
to there.
I was wondering about that, and I thought it might be him, but yes.
Yeah, and so if you pull those references, there's one point at the beginning of the fake elector thing where Jason Miller says, this is crazy. This is, I used the line in my first post on this. I'm going to go pull it up because it's readily available, sort of.
Yes.
Keep talking.
Is it the one, the post from August 1st, Donald Trump's January 6th indictment? No, that's just, you posted that it had been released. The structure?
It's the conspiracy from, hold on.
Oh, the mothership? Conspiracy shit beamed down from the mothership. The prehistory.
Beamed down from that is Jason Miller.
Oh,
that is Jason Miller. And so he's going, if this trial happens before the election, he's going to have to take the stand. And he's already been, I'm sure, sat before the grand jury. And so he's locked into what he said to the grand jury. And this is what has taken time, is that all of these people who might somehow say something exculpatory about Donald Trump, they've already visited the grand jury. And so if they deviate from what they've said to the grand jury, they're going to face perjury charges.
Got it.
So Jason Miller, if this goes to trial in, say, March, Jason Miller is going to have to take the stand and explain what he meant by conspiracy shit being down from the mothership. and what he meant when he said repeatedly that they were not willing to back the statements of you know, the fake electors plot, the Kenneth Cheeseborough stuff, the Rudy Giuliani stuff. They were not willing to say that because they knew it was a lie. That's a pretty powerful witness against Donald Trump, his campaign, whatever, you know, the top person on the campaign. And that's where this heads if it goes to trial before the election.
Got it. So Marcy Wheeler, again, with us trying to make sense of this mountain of stuff coming down on Donald Trump. Now, I read, obviously, through the entire thing a couple of times, and the one name that came up that was missing, conspicuously absent, is Mark Meadows. The fact that Mark Meadows was not named in the indictment is not even one of the six alleged or unnamed co-conspirators, leads any sensible person to think, okay, well, Mark Meadows must have flipped and he's going to be a key witness. Do you believe that?
I think that that gets ahead of things. Okay. I think that it we are so used to corruption on a grand scale that we have a difficult time remembering that even people who testify honestly can be very damning witnesses, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, And by that, I mean, Mark Meadows has a tremendously good attorney, George Terwilliger, former U.S. attorney. He's George Terwilliger, Mark Meadows' attorney, is the guy who got Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez off on his own improper document retention charges. He's a very, very good lawyer, and he has gotten Mark Meadows to be a very, very good subject of an investigation. And so I think assuming he has flipped has wildly overstates what we know and mm-hmm. what there's evidence for. Mm-hmm. Does that mean he's free of any criminal exposure? No, not necessarily. I mean, we don't know the full scope of all of this. We don't, you know, like Mark Meadows, for example, could be implicated in coordinating with the crime scene. Mark Meadows could be implicated in the fundraising. Mark Meadows, but going back to Jason Miller would go to the mat. Although I have to say, Jason Miller has a history of telling something closer to the truth than other witnesses. Hmm. But Jason Miller doesn't have to have flipped if he testified honestly. And that I'm less certain whether that's true. You know, like Mark Meadows may have avoided criminal exposure because he testified honestly without necessarily flipping.
Uh-huh.
I caution people about assuming that Mark Meadows has flipped.
Right. And as you mentioned, Cassidy Hutchinson isn't included in this indictment either, isn't mentioned. And she, of course, was Mark Meadows' assistant.
Yeah. And I said when she testified in summer of 2022, I said, you know, she is a tremendous witness, but she is useful primarily for forcing the testimony of Mark Meadows and Pat Cipollone. And that in fact is what happened since. So mm-hmm. like what is new in the indictment are a couple of actions of Pat Cipollone that we did not previously know. For example, Pat Cipollone asking Trump to withdraw his objections to the election on January 6th. That's new from the January 6th report, and it comes from having Cassidy Hutchinson testify honestly on her own right, and then kind of forcing the issue for Cipollone before the January 6th committee, and after that, forcing the issue you know, with DOJ. Like at that point, he had no choice. At that point, he had no choice. And once DOJ got all the executive privilege waivers, which, by the way, is what January 6th committee did for DOJ in a way that, again, I predicted in July of 2021 was going to be actually really important for going forward, because it's all of this background and all of the animosity between the January 6th committee and the FBI is nevertheless key foundation to how this is going to go to trial and how, importantly, Joe Biden is going to be able to say, I never had any role in the criminal investigation of Donald Trump. And that's going to be true. He right. did have a role in the January 6th committee investigation of Donald Trump, but that was not a criminal investigation. So he wasn't involved in it. And anyway.
So Joe Biden is doing what a president is supposed to do and not get involved in the specifics of cases that the Justice Department is working on. Yet that doesn't stop them from calling it Biden's, you know, Biden's prosecution of Trump. So people need to understand the rhetoric and where it's coming from. It goes back to consider the source.
Right. But you know what? Part of it is all of this anti-Merrick Garland bullshit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, you can look at how Merrick Garland in July of 2021 started laying the groundwork to have both the Senate and the Senate Judiciary Committee and the January 6th committee get privilege waivers for stuff that then we know for a fact that then DOJ piggybacked on.
Okay.
So there was never a moment where that we know of where DOJ had to go to Joe Biden and said, can you please approve the use of these communications for use in a criminal investigation against your potential opponent? And it was a very, very shrewd way of doing this. It is what has fed a lot of the animosity, you know, these claims that January 6th was doing things that DOJ wasn't doing. And it is going to be one of the things that will that may make the difference between a successful prosecution or not. And because instead we've had all these people whining about Merrick Garland for 2.5 years, there isn't that awareness, even though what I just explained to you is all public.
Right. Got it. All right. So the next thing, I guess, unless something else intervenes, in the January 6th case, in the case in D.C., the third indictment we just got, there's a court date, I believe, on August 28th. That's still there?
Yeah, there's a court date this week, though, now. We don't know what it is yet. But, Tanya, so as you said earlier, there's this dispute over the protective order.
Right.
Trump is saying, we need a hearing in 3 weeks' time. And DOJ is saying, we don't need a hearing. And Tanya Chuck kind of split the baby and said, okay, get together and figure out what day this week you guys are going to be before me, because we're going to have a hearing this week before Friday.
On the protective order? Issue?
Yeah, on the protective order.
Okay.
And then once that happens, I expect out of that hearing, you're going to have her decide on the protective order. And then DOJ is going to start sharing discovery with Trump's team
and
they're moving towards trial.
And the whole thing about the protective order is to try to prohibit Trump's team from releasing all the discovery stuff that's coming and trying the case in the media instead of waiting until, you know, the court case comes up. So
yeah, one of the interesting details of that is that DOJ recorded a lot of the interviews and a lot of the, you know, a good number of the interviews, including with the co-conspirators. We know Rudy sat for an interview. We know Boris Epstein, who might be co-conspirator six, sat for a two-day mm-hmm. interviews. Mike Roman was going to do, he's the other person who might be co-conspirator number six. Sidney Powell claimed to be cooperating with prosecutors way back in 2021 when everyone said there was no investigation. Who am I missing? John Eastman hasn't sat with prosecutors, but he keeps, you know, he's got his bar hearing in California. Uh-oh. Where he's gone on the record. Once again, not Florida this time. So it's a good day for you, Nicole.
yay.
So he's got these recorded interviews of what people said, and Donald Trump's lawyers were trying specifically to get permission to share all of that stuff because they basically wanted to go make TV, you know, recordings about what people said
right.
to prosecutors. And DOJ was like, look, you know, if we go this route, we are not obliged to give you any of this until right before trial. So, you know, don't say that you're going to use. I mean, that literally what Trump is trying to do is exploit the fact that DOJ wants to hand them everything,
right.
which never happens, and use that as a way to basically torment the witnesses.
Oh, yeah. So this alone is enough to make anyone like a bit crazy. Now, I've got this graphic that I captured a few months ago, and it's sort of out of date. So Hush Money is indicted already. They have that. But the classified documents case is indicted. January 6th is now indicted. E. Jean Carroll civil cases is ongoing. And in fact, Trump has been smacked down a few times in that his countersuit was just thrown out, and E. Jean Carroll is able to file an additional, I believe, defamation suit based on the comments that Trump made after he lost the case. right? So that's happening. Right.
You got that's happening in December. So like the, so looking at your graphic, the Trump Organization fraud goes to trial in, I think, October. E. Jean Carroll goes back in December. Oy. The hush money right now is scheduled for March. Although, again, Alvin Bragg has said he might be willing to free up that space for the January 6th trial. Mm-hmm. Classified documents goes to trial in May. And then election interference in Georgia will be indicted sometime next week. And Fani Willis will be fighting for space. And oh, by the way, because Dana Nessel is a badass, Michigan was first to the pike on actually charging the fake electors, because all 16 of Michigan's fake electors have been charged, as well as three people who got some tabulators to go fiddle with, including the GOP candidate for Attorney General. He's one of the people who got indicted for the tabulator case. So exciting news for Michigan.
Well, it definitely. And bring it on. I mean, look, and the fact that we're hearing the cries from the right, oh, it's a third world country, or as Donald Trump said, a fourth or a fifth world country, because they're charging this former president with all these crimes. No, what comes out of the whole other world analogy is no president in history before has committed crimes like this. That's where the outrage should be, not in the fact that he's being charged. He's being charged because he did all this stuff. Now, what I wonder is, and all those
can I interrupt and say please? One more thing about his line? He's also saying, why did you wait 2.5 years to charge me? This is one of his lines. Yes. And so people should be ready to say that in the stolen documents case, Trump is single-handedly responsible for at least 3 months of the delay in charging, because he got Aileen Cannon to basically enjoin most of the investigation from September through December of last year. So you put a halt to major parts of the investigation because Trump demanded it. So he could have been indicted on that 3 months before he was, except his own actions delayed it. And then, I did post on this, but this is a really important point. Like Tanya Chutkan, can, you know, Trump is sort of trying to say, oh, I'm going to disqualify her. Tanya Chutkan was approved by the Senate with 95-0 vote.
Right. Yep.
She was approved by Republicans.
Yep.
And she was the person who presided over the January 6th committee's effort to get Trump's documents, the executive privilege challenge that I told you about. And in November of 2021, she ruled for the committee. She basically said, you know, basically Joe Biden and Congress both agree that you can't invoke executive privilege over this. And then Trump appealed it to the D.C. Circuit, and they said not only was Chutkan right about Congress and the president agreeing, but even if this were a criminal case, even if this were the same standard as Nixon, you still wouldn't win, because the peaceful transfer of power is too important. And then it went to the Supreme Court. And on January 19, 2022, Kavanaugh wrote the decision saying, because the D.C. Circuit affirmed Judge Chutkan and also said that even if this were the Nixon standard, you wouldn't have executive privilege, we don't even have to review this.
Right.
So in January of 2022, Justice Kavanaugh basically said Judge Chutkan is right.
Okay.
On executive privilege. And so from January 19th, 2022 until April 27th, I think it was, 2023. Mm-hmm. So well over a year, Donald Trump kept pressing executive privilege claims. He stalled DOJ's investigation from July until April, July 2022 until April 2023 with executive privilege claims. He already knew Brett Kavanaugh wasn't going to buy.
Right.
Right. And so when he says, why didn't you charge me 2.5 years ago? The answer is because you used frivolous executive privilege claims to delay the investigation from July of 2022 until April of 2023. You are single-handedly responsible for the delay in testimony from Mike Pence's aides, from Pat Cipollone and Pat Philbin, from people like Mark Meadows and everyone else in the White House, Dan Scavino, and finally from Mike Pence. And so those frivolous executive privilege claims take up 9 months of what we know the timeline of this investigation was. And that's the answer. That should always be the answer, whoever it is. Well, you could have been indicted 9 months earlier.
That's right.
But you chose to disrupt the investigation.
And in fact, you know, the delays, this is his MO. He wants to delay everything until after the election, thinking that will protect him. He could still, I guess, I don't even know, because it's all uncharted territory. If he's elected, can he get the charges dismissed? Maybe everywhere but Georgia, maybe, or Michigan. The state charges he can't do anything about, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here. In the meantime, the Florida case is, he's got his buddy, Eileen Cannon, who people were thinking, well, maybe she learned her lesson with the first go-round where she was, you know, reprimanded by the very conservative court that she works under, even by Trump appointees who said, no, you can't do this. Now it seems that she's doing Trump's bidding again. What happened yesterday?
I am a bit alarmed with it. So Stan Woodward, when this investigation started, represented 8 people who were witnesses in this case. Mm-hmm. In addition to Walt Nauta, so Trump's alleged co-conspirator, he originally represented Yuskel Tavares, who's the IT guy who has since cooperated against Trump and Nauta. Dan Scavino, Cash Patel, gosh, I always forget, you know, like we can almost get to the 8 people that he represented in this case, but that was obviously going to eventually cause a conflict. And yep. DOJ wrote to Eileen Cannon and said, look, you know, Walt Nauta's lawyer used to represent Yuskel Tavares.
Right.
And so when Yuskel Tavares gets on the stand and testifies against Walt Nauta, it is going, you know, either Stan Woodward is not going to be able to aggressively cross-examine Tavares, this key witness, or you're going to have to get Walt Nauta a new lawyer. And what normally happens is the judge has a hearing and brings in outside lawyers and has the outside lawyer sit down with the defendant, in this case, Walt Nauta, to explain to them, like, this is why you can't be sure whether Stan Woodward has your best interests at heart, because he has this conflict. He's represented the guy who's about to take the stand against you. And instead of doing that, she said, why is DOJ still investigating this in DC? Now, she may have a point. Like, mm-hmm. you know, she may know that it may be true that DOJ overstepped things in DC. I doubt it. But it is a fair question to raise. Okay. I mean, just as an example that people might remember, Roger Stone was indicted in January of 2019. And then in May of 2019, Mueller, on like the last thing he did was get the testimony of this Roger Stone aide named Andrew Miller. And it turned out that Andrew Miller's testimony was in a new grand jury.
Okay.
But Roger Stone assumed it wasn't. So Roger Stone carried out this challenge saying, how could you get Andrew Miller's testimony when I've already been charged? And so he thought there was a violation, and it turned out not to be the case. I suspect the same is true here. But, you know, it is something that that Cannon should legitimately look into, but not at the expense of Walt Nauta having conflicted counsel for 2 more weeks, 3 more weeks until she decides it. And so it is the first thing that I've seen that does alarm me about what she's doing. It may be justifiable, but ultimately she's not representing the needs. She's not ensuring that Walt Nauta gets a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. I mean, you know, if she's going to help Donald Trump and hurt Walt Nauta in the process, that's a problem.
Do you think what she's doing is in order to, you know, do Trump's bidding, to help delay the proceedings instead of, you know, having this moved from, this was the May 20th date that was set, right?
No. So it thus far isn't going to change the date. It's going to change the resolution of, it's going to delay the resolution of whether or not Stan Woodward should step off and find a better counsel for Walt Nauta. It could, you know, like the most outrageous thing it could do is she could decide that DOJ overstepped in using continuing to use the D.C. grand jury, and then she could invite Stan Woodward to dismiss, you know, to move to dismiss the charges based on grand jury problems. As I understand it, but this is based on what other people say, as I understand it, that would be an appealable, something appealable to the 11th Circuit. So if she does that, that, you know, DOJ has an out. But she, what probably happened, Nicole, is that DOJ started investigating this in D.C. because that's where they knew that everything started.
Right.
And over the course of the investigation, they came to the conclusion that the crimes that they needed to charge happened in Florida. Right. However, over the course of the investigation, they got grand jury testimony, probably from Yuskel Tavares. And so if Yuskel Tavares, for example, was at risk of perjury charges, he did get a target letter before he ended up cooperating. So, you know, it's possible that he just said, let me go back and clean up my grand jury testimony. It's possible that he said, let me enter into a cooperation agreement where I work off a perjury charge. Mm-hmm. Both of those would necessarily have to happen in D.C. because that's where any perjury or any, you know, if he made false claims in interviews that happened in D.C. And so that's the most likely explanation for what happened. But, you know, Aileen Cannon is going to make it really hard for DOJ to give that explanation.
Wow. So there's, and she's coming under again, more scrutiny, saying, okay, well, maybe she didn't learn her lesson and she's not just going by the letter of the law. I don't know. But it looks like she's not going to recuse herself. She's bound and determined to stay on this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one other question, and I'll go back to here at emptywheel.net. You wrote a post on Friday, Trump's family is not in his prosecution. And I'm wondering, where are the Spahn? Where are Ivanka? And, you know, with all the focus, and we're not talking about Hunter Biden today, and for good reason, we've done enough. And you've written about, you can't ignore him because they're not ignoring him. We need to talk about it. But again, I don't see the connection between anything Hunter Biden did and the Biden administration or campaign or any of that. However, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner worked on the campaign and in the Trump White House. And I know they were complicit with some of his crimes, yet we've not seen them charged or even mentioned in any of these indictments yet.
There was a New York Times report for some weeks ago in which Jared was brought in to be questioned, but that specifically said, and this was Maggie Haberman, so she would know, that specifically said that Ivanka had not yet been questioned, even though she had received a subpoena. I don't know what to make of that. You know, and it's actually one of those things where I'm not all that. I mean, I did mention it, and I mentioned it partly because Chris Hayes, I think, rightly pointed out, why aren't we making a bigger deal out of the fact that Melania won't accompany Donald Trump to one after another of his arraignments? Why is Trump's family nowhere to, you know, visibly in support of Donald Trump as he faces criminal justice? But the Ivanka question is quite interesting because there are overt acts described in the indictment. So, for example, that moment after Trump has written a tweet targeting Mike Pence, and all of his aides are in the dining room. And and the indictment, it's actually my favorite line in the indictment where it says, well, they left him alone in the dining room. He sent out that tweet. And then they all run back in the dining room and try and get him to write something. And he ends up writing, and the indictment is quite clear about this. He ends up writing a tweet saying, stay peaceful.
Right.
The indictment's like, that's not true. They weren't being peaceful.
They weren't peaceful.
And it describes that statement came at the behest of, and it lists all of the aides. It lists Mark Meadows. It lists the two Pats, Cipollone and Philbin. It lists Eric Hirschman. It doesn't list Ivanka. And we know that Ivanka was the one, or at least there is witness testimony that Ivanka is the one who wrote the stay peaceful line. And so it is really fascinating that she's not in there. And I don't, you know, again, I don't care. I don't care yet. I just observed it because I can think of a number of reasons why she wouldn't be in there. One of which would be it avoids a political hassle by not naming her. And you can bring her in later. You can try and get her, you know, you can try and get her honest testimony later, or I don't know. It's not an issue that I feel like needs to be resolved today, but I did observe it because there are several things in several scenes in the indictment that we know Ivanka was central in, and she's not in there.
Not in there at all. But the point is they can bring any of these people up on charges or for investigation or anything going forward. Nothing here rules that out. So
No. And for example, the January 6th committee, when they made referrals, basically said, I mean, they didn't say it this way, but they basically said, we think Ivanka lied to us. And they cited a PR person who is the one who said that the line "Stay peaceful" came from Ivanka. Uh-huh. They cited Ivanka's chief of staff for her response to Trump bullying Mike Pence. So, you know, they came pretty close to saying we think that Ivanka should be prosecuted for false statements. And it's unclear what DOJ did with that kind of referral. But it is what it is.
Right. You know? And what I would like to know is if there is going to be any kind of investigation, and these may be, apart and separate from any of the ongoing criminal and civil investigations of Trump that are already in the pipeline. Ivanka and her Chinese patents that like billions of dollars worth for her products that were approved soon after Trump came into office. Jared Kushner getting an infusion of billions of dollars to buy him out, to help him get out of the 666 Fifth Avenue building debacle. That his whole empire, the Kushner fortune, was about to implode. These things may not fit into any of those neat compartments, but I'm wondering why we're not hearing anything about them. If there's going to be any investigation of that kind of stuff going forward, or we don't know.
Well, I mean, what we do know is that Donald Trump was asked about his own ties, especially with the Saudi sponsored golf tournament.
Right.
So that came under purview of investigation, and I wouldn't be surprised if Jared's ties to the Saudis did as well, if that was pertinent to the investigation. So that is part of Jack Smith's investigation. But, you know, I just want to remind you, because here we are, we have an indictment.
Yep.
And I can tell you where the investigation into four of the co-conspirators came from. And Rudy Giuliani, the investigative steps into Rudy Giuliani started on Lisa Monaco's first day on the job.
Wow.
We know that the Sidney Powell investigation was overt by September 2021. And we know that the Jeffrey Clark investigation came out of DOJIG, which started possibly before the end of the Trump administration. And so for years, people have said there is no investigation. And half of the co-conspirators in this indictment, undeniably, obviously, the investigations came at the same time as people were screaming, oh, no investigation is happening. We are better off if investigations aren't public. I mean, one of the things that the only thing that making and this is clear in the last 3 weeks, right? The only thing that making an investigation into Donald Trump overt does is ratchet up his obstructive efforts.
Right.
So if DOJ made a decision based on what they knew from the Russian investigation that the way to properly investigate Trump was to delay the time it goes overt, and they may well have done that and may well be smart, you know, then what it did was delay the chance for him to tamper with witnesses before they visited the grand jury.
Got it. And to ratchet up, you know, his martyrdom among his followers. And, you know, that's a cult. That there's no rhyme or reason there. It's just a cult. And these people just will not pay attention to reality and facts. Instead, they buy the bullshit coming out of his mouth. Marcy, we could just keep going. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that is on your radar that we need to know?
No, I'll be back next week.
Got it. And you probably will. Thank you so much for sharing and talking this out with me. I've got lots of thoughts, but you've got the facts. And I think we are able to suss through a lot of the stuff by just shooting the shit about what's going on. unencumbered by, you know, time constraints and stuff like that. So, as always, thank you. Marcy Wheeler, mtwheel.net should be your first stop in your morning reading every day. Thank you, Marcy, and I will talk to you very soon.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Take care.
And there you go. Marcy Wheeler, a national treasure. Even if she is in Ireland, she still is. She, you know, Marcy is great. And thankfully, you know, I've known her for, I don't know, a dozen years or so now or more. And thankfully, when there's stuff to unpack, she's there for us. So Marcy is on the show fairly regularly. I know we had a bunch of new people come in today because Marcy was going to be here. So come back. We have fun. We really do. And we get to a lot of good information. So thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place, same shit. All right. Till then, have a good one. Thank you, Eponus Tribe. Thank you so much. Who asks in the chat room, where are we on the statute of limitations? Gen 6 committee used up almost 2 years now. 2 years IOW in order to charge Trump's kids, i.e. Ivanka and hubby et al. Good question. But they can still be charged, I believe. More learning to come. This is what we do here. Thank you for listening, everybody. Gracias, amigos. Hasta mañana, baby. Ooh, that was good, right? I don't know why it's coming back. I was going to play you a spot, but I guess I'm not going to now. We'll do this.